This is Standing Watch. And now, Evangelist Norbert Link.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to our Standing Watch program. A couple of weeks or so ago, I had a program titled The Pope is Dead, Now What? This program today is entitled The Pope is Alive, Now What? Is he, Pope Leo XIV, up to the task? The Independent wrote on May 9, the first ever American-born pope inherits a world in crisis. Leo XIV's vision for the Catholic Church is one of peace and justice and building bridges ready to receive with open arms all who need our charity, our presence, dialogue, love. His urgent message of peace confronts vast suffering and death from brutal wars, simmering tensions among nuclear powers, and a long shadow of abuse within a church he now leads. The papal conclave selected Leo XIV despite allegations that he had mishandled sexual abuse cases involving priests in both Peru and the United States. Survivors of abuse are now demanding accountability from the new pope. Leo XIV, the Latin Yankee, as he is known in Rome, follows the Jesuit legacy of Francis in South America. And because of that, some have suggested that he may be a second Francis. Even his own brother has said that, but the question is he? This may be true, this may not be true. First, let me read to you from an article by the New York Post dated May 8. Newly elected Pope Leo XIV spent years amplifying criticism of President Trump's policies on social media, with the Catholic Church's first American leader taking particular aim at the Republicans' hardline immigration stance. His final X post before being elected was a retweet of a message from Philadelphia-based Catholic commentator Rocco Palmo, who on April 14 slammed Trump's partnership with El Salvador's President Bukele on deportation of illegal migrants. And so the question, of course, has been raised, why did the Pope adopt the name Leo? And I'd like to go through some of these Leos in the past. Of course, since he is called now Leo XIV, obviously there had to be 13 prior Leos. CNN wrote on May 8, the first Pope Leo, who served in the 5th century, is known as Leo the Great, and is remembered in legend of persuading Attila the Hun to halt his invasion and spare the Roman Empire from destruction. The name Leo derives from the Latin for lion, suggesting strength and courage. It has been suggested also that his name could represent a pope who wants to be strong during times of crises, with a profound respect for tradition and history. CBS News wrote on May 9, Leo I wrote Leo's Tome, a document that influenced the official doctrine defining Jesus Christ as both fully human and fully divine, a completely false teaching. I want to say that in passing, Christ was by no means fully human and fully divine. When he was here on earth, he was fully human. And of course, you know, he had God's Holy Spirit without measure, but he was fully human. And that's why he was able to die. That's why he could be tempted with sin. So the concept that he was fully divine and fully human when he was here on earth is completely, totally false. But I want to go on with an article by National Geographic, dated May 9. Elected in AD 795, Pope Leo III was a pope who crowned Charlemagne as the first Holy Roman Emperor. Many historians credit Charlemagne with spreading Christianity across these formerly pagan regions. And it says the ruler became defender of the Christian faith, and under him, the continent flourished. Pope Leo III's decision to name the emperor as leader of the church reaffirmed the relationship between the papacy and the Frankish rulers, who would protect the Catholic Church against threats. Now, Charlemagne killed people, slaughtered them, massacred them, who didn't want to convert to Catholicism, to Catholic Church. Either you get baptized or you die. So that is Charlemagne. That's how he brought stability, quote-unquote, to the empire. The article goes on to say that things came to a head after Constantinople closed all its Latin churches. In response, Pope Leo IX sent a delegation led by Hubert of Silva Candida to Constantinople, ostensibly to settle the disagreement with Patriarch Michael Cirularius. Instead, Hubert placed excommunication for the Patriarch in the city. Pope Leo III had died by the time of the excommunication, but it was nonetheless a move that he had initiated. As a result, the Roman Catholic Church based in Rome and the Eastern Orthodox Church centered in Constantinople became two separate entities after this great schism. And let me just also say that according to the Bible, when it comes to the history of the revivals of the Roman Empire, it would always look at Rome as the center, not Constantinople, before and after the schism. The article goes on to say that another Pope Leo, Pope Leo X, also faced a divisive moment within Christendom. During the last year of his pontificate, Pope Leo X excommunicated Martin Luther. And so CBS News then added on May 9, the last pope to use the name Leo, Pope Leo XIII, who was a head of the Catholic Church between 1878 and 1903, is perhaps most famous for writing the Rerum Novarum, which translates to on new things, but the Latin meaning is also on revolutionary changes. And that's interesting now because according to Breitbart, dated May 10, the new pope said, "I chose to take the name Leo XIV. There are different reasons for this. Different reasons for this, remember this now. But mainly because Pope Leo XIII in Rerum Novarum addressed the social question in the context of the first great industrial revolution. In our own day, the church offers to everyone the treasury of her social teaching in response to another industrial revolution and to developments in the field of artificial intelligence that pose new challenges for the defense of human dignity, justice, and labor." And he might very well be correct on that one, but I personally doubt that this was the main reason why he chose the name. Maybe that's what he meant to do, what he was thinking of doing, but I think he was led to use that name because of other reasons as well, as we have just explained some of them from a historic standpoint. Very important biblical historic standpoint, because Charlemagne, of course, was one of the leaders of the revival of the Roman Empire as prophesied in the Bible. But there is another interesting aspect to the new pope. The Federalist wrote on May 9 the following very interesting thoughts. This author said, "I am setting aside the obvious fact that Pope Leo is far more conservative on issues like abortion and gay marriage than most mega influences. Pope Leo appears to be far more traditional and orthodox than his predecessor, of course, Francis. In particular, he seems to have a special devotion to the traditional Latin Mass, as Benedict had, the former Cardinal Ratzinger. This matters a great deal more than whether he has policy disagreements with Trump over things like immigration or gun control. Pope Francis was infamously hostile toward the Latin Mass, despite its growing popularity around the world, especially among young people, converts, and Catholics committed to conforming their lives to the Orthodox Catholic faith. In contrast, there are ample signs that Pope Leo will reverse course on the Latin Mass, lift restrictions on its celebration." Now, it's a big deal amongst those in the Catholic Church who are looked upon as being conservative. They want that Latin Mass back. The article says a restoration of the Latin Mass under Pope Leo would mean a return to doctrinal clarity and confidence, and a renewed papal resistance to the modernizing factions within the Catholic Church, who for many years have been pushing for the ordination of women and communion for divorced and remarried Catholics. Above all, the restoration of the Latin Mass will all but guarantee that this Pope will not push doctrinal boundaries the way Pope Francis did, and will return the Holy See to its traditional role of defending the Catholic faith and evangelizing the world. In recent days, multiple Catholic commentators have reported that Pope Leo, when he was Cardinal Prevost, privately celebrated the Latin Mass for years, including at the Vatican in recent years, where he had a special indult from Pope Francis to do so. The blessing Pope Leo gave the crowd from St. Peter's Basilica was in Latin, using a formula that has not been used since Pope Pius the 12th in 1939. On Friday, Pope Leo celebrated the first Mass in Latin. And here, notice this interesting comment. All Catholics should hope and pray for this, but so should all non-Catholics, whether Protestants or unbelievers, for the simple reason that without a clear, strong voice in the Holy See defending the faith, our civilization will not long endure. Now, what we are seeing from biblical prophecy is that the mother church will be joined again by the daughter churches, and it will become a very powerful power block, if you please, and civilization will endure in the way this author puts it, but it will be a civilization which will be a grave danger to mankind. Newsmax speculated some more about what Pope Leo XIV might stand for, and so on May 11, they wrote, based on a 2012 address to bishops, Leo would likely bring the church back in line. In that speech, Cardinal Robert Prevost accused the media of fostering sympathy for beliefs and practices that are at odds with the gospel. He cited the homosexual lifestyle and alternative families comprised of same-sex partners and their adopted children. Also, Prevost shut down a government initiative to promote gender ideology in schools while he was bishop in Peru. The promotion of gender ideology is confusing because it seeks to create genders that don't exist, he said at the time. On abortion, Prevost posted a photograph from a March for Life event with the exhortation, "Let's defend human life at all times." In regards to capital punishment, Prevost said in a 2015 post, it's time to end the death penalty. The new pope is aligned with the previous pope on climate change. In November, Prevost said it is time to move from words to action on the environmental crisis, according to the post. And then let's not forget the issues of immigration and gun control. So looking at all of that, it appears very clear that the new pope is going to be a lot more conservative than the previous one, and that he will stand for quote-unquote doctrinal clarity, in other words, bringing the Catholic Church back to its doctrinal heritage and its doctrinal origins. Now, why is this important? Why is this even something we are addressing here in this program? Because Christ told us to watch always, to pray that we are going to be counted worthy to escape all the terrible things which are going to take place, and to be able to stand in front of the Son of Man. He said, when you see the fig tree blossoming, you know that the time is near. And so he's giving us a lot of signs, a lot of things to look at insofar as the end time is concerned and the events which will have to take place. The whole book of Revelation is filled with admonitions, with news which are going to happen, and it has a lot to say about the Catholic Church and the Pope. So that's why we are going to keep you informed, and we are going to continue to do so, And so I thank you very much for listening. And until next time, this is Norbert Link for the Standing Watch program.
Standing Watch is a presentation by The Church of the Eternal God, P.O. Box 270519, San Diego, California, 92198. More information is also available at our website, eternalgod.org.